I was a child in the 60s into the 1970s, turbulent, remarkable decades with great scientific advances. We put men on the moon, we had supersonic flight via Concorde, and we had heart surgery and heart transplants. Coincidentally, my dad was a boilerman in the 60s and 70s at the National Heart Hospital, and it was never that it seemed that heart surgery was never far from the front pages of the papers. But actually, I'm learning this morning that the history of heart surgery goes back a lot longer than I thought. Let's get the thoughts now. We've spoken before of Thomas Morris, top historian and author and expert on all matters surgery and medical related, and the author of a fascinating book called The Matter of the Heart. Good morning, Thomas, and good to talk to you again.
Hi, good morning.
Okay, so tell me a bit about this trailblazing surgeon, Percy Furnival. When in history are we talking about with our Percy?
Well, it's the very beginning of the 20th century. And so the interesting thing is that heart surgery goes right back to 1896. The first cardiac surgery anywhere took place in Germany, in Frankfurt, operated by a man called Ludwig Rehn. And that very first operation all the way back then was repairing a stab wound to the heart of a man who'd been attacked on the street. So those very first operations starting in Frankfurt in 1896 were very simple repairs of slashes, injuries to the heart, nothing more sophisticated than that. But what's quite interesting is that until quite recently, nobody's really been sure about when the first heart operation took place in this country. And I believe now, having kind of dug through some documents, that I've found the very first operation that took place in this country, and it was in 1903 in what used to be called the London Hospital in Whitechapel.
And where did you find details of this case, Thomas?
Well, the interesting thing is that surgeons are kind of tend to be quite obsessed with the idea of being first to do something. So it's known as having priority in the world of surgery. And the way you normally establish priority is you write an article in one of the professional journals. So we know, for instance, the first operation to take place in Germany, the one I just mentioned. We know that the first operation in America took place in a shack in Alabama on a kitchen table in 1901. But for some reason, there's no article comparable for British surgeons. So no British surgeon, as far as I know, ever claimed to be the first to perform cardiac surgery. And I found this little report from a newspaper from 1903 reporting that a man in East End had been stabbed. His name was John Long. And then he'd been taken to the London Hospital in Whitechapel. And this report, which is quite short, said that a surgeon called Percy Furnival had put in 3 stitches into this man's heart. And to my amazement, the logbooks for this operating theatre in which it took place at the London Hospital survived. So I went down to the archives and there it was. In the logbook it says, stitched wound in heart, Percy Furnival.
Do we know anything about how this poor chap came to be stabbed in the heart? I think he was in a pub in London with his wife, wasn't he, John Long?
Yeah, well, the story is actually amazingly complete because there were a couple of interviews with him in the newspapers at the time. And also I found at the archive the full notes of his case right from his admission right up to the day he was discharged. And what happened was that his name was John Long. He was a tailor from Hackney. And he went out for a drink one night with his wife, Alice. And they went to a pub. It was called the Phoenix Inn in Spitalfields, actually.
Right.
And he bumped into an acquaintance of his who was a German cabinet maker called Jakob Blitz. And for some reason, Jakob Blitz was in a kind of furious mood and he was ranting and raving about something or other. And he suddenly produced this enormous knife, which he thrust into the counter of the pub. And you can kind of imagine the scenario now. John Long said, oh, no, look, I've got no problem with you. Why don't you leave? You're obviously in a bit of a bad mood. So he tried to escort this guy, Jakob Blitz, out onto the street. And as he managed to get him out of the door of the pub, Blitz whipped round and stabbed him in the chest with his knife.
Wow.
And within a minute, John Long had lost consciousness. And a local doctor was called, and he said this man's going to die very quickly unless he gets treatment. So they took him straight to Whitechapel, which was only a few hundred yards away, to the London Hospital. And he was seen he arrived about midnight, and within 15 minutes, he was in the operating theatre being operated on.
OK, now you gave, I know, a talk on all this last week at the Worshipful Society of Apothecaries. What do we know about the operation? For example, would Mr. Long have been given anaesthetic for this operation?
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But, I mean, it would have been quite routine in 1903 to give a patient chloroform to knock them out during major surgery. But in fact, with some types of operation, doctors had already discovered that chloroform had an unfortunate tendency to impair the breathing and even to stop the heart. So in operations where it was emergency surgery and the patient was already unconscious, many surgeons actually preferred to go without. So it's not actually clear from the notes of the operation, but I suspect he wasn't given chloroform.
Okay, now, my medical knowledge is sketchy at best, but I kind of know that to get to the heart, you've got to go through the rib cage. How did Percy Furnival manage that?
Well, the contemporary technique for doing this sort of stuff hadn't been originated yet, so surgeons were pretty much, you know, on their own here. And what he chose to do was to saw through three of the ribs and kind of part them. And then he also had to cut out a section of the breastbone, the sternum. And that gave him quite good exposure of the heart. And then he was able to put three stitches in. And then once he put these stitches in, he kind of cleared out all the blood that had clotted inside the pericardium. This is the sac around the heart. Then he had to put the ribs back together, and they would heal quite well. But this section of the breastbone that he cut out, he couldn't put back. So after that, this unfortunate patient, John Long, was left with basically his heart just under a layer of skin in his chest.
Yeah.
And apparently during his recovery, the other doctors used to kind of stop at his bedside and watch his heart beating through the skin of his chest.
Pumping the skin of the chest because there's no rib cage or sternum to kind of protect it.
Exactly. And for the rest of his life, he had to wear a breastplate made from aluminium with leather straps over this exposed heart to make sure that, no accident could occur.
Well, at least if Jakob Blitz was in a bad mood again and tried to kill him again, he'd have some protection this time around.
Fortunately, Mr. Blitz was apprehended and was, in fact, you can the reports of his appearances in the police courts and then the High Court are actually on record, and he went to prison for quite a long time. So thankfully, there was no danger of that.
And how long did Mr. Long, John Long, live after this operation with his aluminium breastplate to protect his kind of beating heart?
Well, the strange thing is, so after the operation, he was actually in hospital for another 2 months, but not really to do with a heart wound. He had a kidney infection, which I think was a, you know, very likely sequel in those days. But I did find this reference in a letter written to one of the medical journals in the 1950s from a surgeon who had been present at the operation, and he said that Mr. Long had still been alive 10 years earlier. That would have been the late 1940s. So he lived for at least 45 years after this operation, and maybe as long as half a century.
And when did Mr. Furnival, Percy Furnival, this master surgeon, when did he die?
Well, he lived until 1938. So there's a quite interesting story about him, actually, which is, I mean, his father was one of the founders of the Oxford English Dictionary and also founded quite a famous rowing club in Hammersmith, which still bears his name. But Percy was a champion cyclist in his student days. And in fact, he held several world records, not just for the bicycle, but also for the tricycle and also for the tandem. He was quite a celebrated amateur cyclist. And then he gave all that up to be a surgeon. And by 1901, he was already quite a famous surgeon in London. But unfortunately, he had to give all that up in 1919. He had to retire owing to ill health. And he went and retired down to North Cornwall. And then he lived till 1938, which is when he would have been 70. And then, unfortunately for him, he was an inveterate smoker, and he died from a throat cancer. But he documented his own cancer treatment in the pages of the British Medical Journal, one of the first doctors to do so. He was one of the first doctors to undergo radiotherapy and wrote about, you know, unpleasant effects it had on him.
So he really was a trailblazer, both in his personal life and his professional life as a surgeon. I've mentioned your book, The Matter of the Heart, Thomas. We spoke not so long ago about your other great book, about the case of the exploding teeth. Remind everybody listening what that book's about. It's a kind of medical miscellany, really, isn't it? All kinds of fantastic odds and ends about our bodies and medical knowledge.
Yeah, it's a collection of medical curiosities, really. I mean, in fact, in some ways, this story, the Percy Furnival story, could be out of its
pages. Sure, for the sequel.
I like to collect these strange stories which just crop up from time to time in medical journals. They still do to this day, actually. You still see these kind of weird stories of unusual things that people have swallowed or whatever. But, yeah, the page of medical journals is a great source for entertaining and unusual stories.
And how did your speech go down last week? I bet they loved it, didn't they?
Well, I hope so. I mean, it was about various other things as well as this story, but it was a good opportunity to tell this story, which really I think has been it's unknown, it's been buried. It was never reported in any of the professional literature. It was just something that happened to a surgeon on a night on duty in an emergency department in 1903. So it's great to have an opportunity to kind of share this story, and you know, it's great also to know the name of the patient and the name of the surgeon, a bit of background of all these people. So it was a nice opportunity to share that with other people for the first time.
Which was a fascinating slice of London social history, British social history, from the Edwardian era, that all this happened, and yet they got into hospital, and then this guy, obviously just thinking about the patient's well-being, what can I possibly do to save him? I'll go in through the chest and I'll stitch his heart up. I mean, the courage to take that decision is astonishing.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And bear in mind that only a handful of people worldwide had done this ever. There's a little aside in one letter I found where his assistant surgeon says he required some persuasion to do it. And you can understand why. You know, if it's only a couple of people in Germany, France and America that had done it before, then who wants to be the first in this country, really, if it's in such desperate circumstances?
And probably all done without anaesthetic.
Very probably, yes.
Thomas, you've been a great guest once again. Thank you very much indeed for your time this morning. Thomas Morris there, top historian, all matters surgical and medical, author of the book The Matter of the Heart, and also The Case of the Exploding Teeth. I know, that book really is as good as its title. And you heard about it here on Talk Radio. We, my friends, are the talk of the nation. Pass the chloroform.